The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, to bet or not to bet? No, sometimes when is the question. We're going to tell you why one team's senior moment doesn't even last that long. And tonight in the NBA, we're going to break out the chessboard. We can take advantage of an opening with a Lopez gambit.
So, Dave, it's a weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, but before we get into the weekend, we got to take a look at what happened last night. First take on a Friday. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Wasn't last night. We opened the box yesterday. If we get into March, many of you will know what that means. Baseball prospectus time. Yeah, you can get a little bit earlier in February, but with the daily baskets going on, usually March 1st is the first time we'll open the box. If you're going to be with us for baseball this year, or even not with us, but going to be betting it on your own, nothing more important you can do anywhere in handicapping, get a copy of that. Not just the fact that the information is so good and so valuable, and you'll refer back to it all season long, but the fact that it's also literate, it's very well written. There's a lot of humor in there. You can actually breeze through this. So many of these preseason publications are tedious to get through. This is a breeze. It's good information. It's presented very well. A lot of the terminology in that book we'll be using on the show daily coming up in a couple of weeks. Cannot recommend Baseball Prospectus more. Not a paid endorsement, by the way. No tie-ins with them at all, but something you definitely should be doing. And you don't have yours yet, do you?
I do not. I'm not looking at baseball yet. A couple of weeks away still for me.
Oh, it's not so much that you read it now, just the feeling that you have it. March 1st, special time.
You just like to smell it, Dave. Who's kidding who? That fresh ink, you know, good stuff, right?
Well, when the book's that thick, the ink is enough to have an impact.
But certainly a book that I will have and will begin perusing, in about 3 weeks, because March, for me, not about baseball prep. The end of March is about baseball prep. Beginning of March, we'll be doing a little arena football prep for sure. But right now, really starting today, through this week, through this weekend, into next week, the week after, and even the week after that, about the next three and a half weeks, this is March Madness. This is where you sink your teeth into college basketball morning, noon, and night. And it's a time of year where I expect to make a lot of money. So what do we do for March Madness? You have to do a little March Madness prep. And that has to do, you got to pay your bills. You got to call your mom. And for me, I had to take care on date night last night. What am I going to do? I tell her, hey, no date night next week. No date night the week after that. Got to take her out. So she wants to play poker. And I'm always happy. Hey, anytime I can get away with a date night playing poker, it's a good thing. So we're like, where do you want to play? What do you want to do? Let's go play a tournament. Huh? Okay, no problem. Let's go play a tournament. So a lot of times we'll play at the Orleans, a local casino here in Vegas. But Orleans on Thursday nights, it's not Hold'em. It's a Omaha tournament. And I'm not, bad enough to have to throw away money to buy into a Hold'em tournament. Damn well not going to do it for Omaha. So we're not going to go to Orleans. So we're like, where do you want to go? Let's check out some of the smaller tournaments in town. Let's go over to Bally's. So you got to park at Paris, walk all the way over to Bally's. One table. No, I'm not interested in a one table tournament. What do we want to do? Let's walk over to Planet Hollywood. It's right next door. Walk over to Planet Hollywood. They got two tables. No, I'm not really interested in that. I don't want a prize pool of $330 or $550 or whatever it is. End up at the Stratosphere, a place that I haven't walked into in over a year. It's packed. They got like nine tables. I sit down, play cards all night, watching, sweating out that New Mexico State-Nevada game with a screen right in front of me. Good experience. So for low buy-in tournaments, if you're in Vegas, weekday tournaments, Stratosphere. That's my recommendation time last night and a good tournament with plenty of action. Enough with the poker. That's done. From here on out, college hoops, NBA, we are ready to roll. And Dave, we spent a lot of time earlier in the week breaking down some of the keys to conference tournament action. And now, really, as I've brought up eight times already, the frenzy really begins today. The odds makers now have to begin sorting through multiple settings involving teams that played the night before, one area where bettors can really gain an edge. That was a setting for today's Market Watch topic, but this letter from Timothy really introduces it well. We'll discuss the general aspects of the question at another time, but today we're going to make the tourney cycle ahead our focus. Here's a question from Timothy. Quote, says, avid watcher here, enjoyed the show very much. I was wondering about the following. When is the best time to lock in a play? Should one jump on the opening line, hoping they don't lose value, or two, wait and hope to get value by line movement and at the same time risk losing that value? So it's an interesting question, Timothy, and one that merits some discussion. So, Dave, jump on the openers, or do you wait, hold off a little bit, see where the line's going to go?
This topic actually is worthy of every bit as much time as handicapping the games themselves. And if you break down the professional groups that do this, they'll say maybe even more so. They may get more of an advantage with what they do in the marketplace than their ability to actually predict the games. We don't do it as much, though, because we know that's not practical for most of the audience. We know most of people just have a couple of accounts. They're not sitting in front of a screen all day. They've got a limited window to get their action in. But we do want to address it in terms of conference tournament week, because it's the single most frenzied week of the entire year. Every other day in college basketball, except for some of these preseason holiday tournaments, you know what the lines are for the following day before you go to bed at night. So you're doing your pre-prep. You're doing this work. Now, when we get to next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and even next Sunday, we're going to wake up. Here comes this fresh line, 7 o'clock Pacific, 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock for some of the Las Vegas casinos. And there's a frenzy because you have an idea where it might be, but you know who you want to bet. You know what line you want to bet them at. But when is so difficult in conference tournament week, and there's a big part of that. We know why we like a team. We know certain pieces of information out there. But you don't know if the markets have that same information. So it's the single toughest week in that regard. When in doubt, if information itself is the key to making a bet, you go first. If it's a handicap or if it's a theory, sometimes you can wait a little bit. That's our rule of thumb when we get to those days next week. If there's a guy hurt Wednesday night and we want to play against his team the following morning, even if it's not because of the injury, but if the injury's a part of the process, we're going to be the first ones out of the gate.
Yeah, it really is an interesting question, and there's no right answer, per se. We talk a lot on this show about handicapping skills and different mentalities, different thought processes you want to go when you're breaking down games, analyzing games, coming up with plays that make sense from your perspective. We don't talk as much on this show about betting skills. And I will tell you, as a bettor, betting skills are every bit as important as handicapping skills. One of the most successful sports bettors out there, a guy by the name of Steve Fezzik, back-to-back winner in the Hilton contest. Many of you are familiar with his name. Fezzik will tell you himself, he can't handicap. He can't handicap, he probably can't name three college basketball players. I'll take the under three. But the guy can bet. He has incredible betting skills, ways to find lines that other people can't find, and ways to manipulate lines, and ways to get involved in games in under-the-radar fashions where books aren't going to notice, and all kinds of different strategies. The bottom line is, betting skills are extremely important. Now, all I can say in terms of a recommendation, you got to have a line service. If you're really looking to beat the number, if you're really looking to make sure you get the best of the number, you have to have, I use Sports Options. Sports Options have always been good for me. Covers has a line product. There are a handful of them out there. They're not cheap, but you can easily track what I call the leading indicator books. We talk about some of them on the show, but you can take a look at where the leading indicator books are going at any given moment, where the money is starting to go, and the rest of the books will follow. But you'll see lines come up, you'll see lines come down. It's not like if you see a leading indicator book pointing in one direction, oh, you can be sure, hey, I better get on this now, because it could come back the other way it could come back the other way further than it ever went up in the first place. This happens all the time. So in my mind, having that service really helps, but no matter how good you are, you're never going to be perfect. There will be games where you're going to take a plus three, and if you waited an hour, you might have gotten a plus four. It's going to happen. Try not to beat yourself up when that does happen, even if it costs you a potential wager.
So you'll probably see us distracted a little bit on the shows we're going to do next Wednesday, next Thursday, because we're going to be watching line moves happening while we're on the air. There'll be games being played while we're on the air. Part of the thought we had today is we're going to spill some coffee on the floor here so the janitor has an excuse to actually be in the room during the show and might be able to slip him a few notes here or there. It is a difficult process. We'll try to walk through some of those line movement aspects on these games next week, because we'll be here with games about to tip off while we're on the air. We'll tell you, okay, if you haven't gone yet, wait on this one. If you want to go on this one, maybe you should go now. We'll try to do that a little bit more for you. It's an excellent, excellent question, and there's not a single week of the entire sports calendar year where it comes into play more than next week.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going on right now. Colonial Conference Tournament in action as we speak. NC Wilmington with the outright upset already this morning. Indiana State down by 19 early in the second half against Wichita State in Missouri Valley Conference play. We got a SoCon final in the books already with College of Charleston losing to Appalachian State. And just tipped off Citadel and Western Carolina. So there's action as we speak. There'll be action next week throughout the course of the show. So make sure you have us on while you're watching some of these games. It's going to be a good time. Anyhow, we had a great question earlier in today's show from Timothy. Please keep those emails coming. Address sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. You can get involved in the covers.com community, covers.com/posting forum. And remember, big announcement on Monday's show for the March Madness Party. Be sure, if you're coming to town, be in town Wednesday night. We're going to announce location and details. Monday show. Be here or be square.
We've been pretty good since coming on the air about Kardashian jokes. But you know what? In our Insider Six-Pack, we're going to tell you coming up that Lamar Odom is now playing in the D-League. You can insert your own joke right there. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
I haven't been able to do this all week, Dave. It's time to. Pop that top. Yeah, let's open up an Insider Six-Pack for Friday. Never too early to crack that first one of the weekend. And today, let's start with some NBA news. In Boston, it's been a very disappointing season for the Celtics so far. They're sitting at 500 right now, despite having played the NBA's 28th weakest schedule. The problem with injuries, the problem with age, they both have really caught up with Danny Ainge's roster. This season, and Boston right now in many ways seems to have lost their swagger. Now, they may be losing even more. We've heard multiple reports over the last 48 hours dealing with proposed Rajon Rondo trades. Now, Rondo is probably the best player on the current Celtics roster because of his youth. There may actually be some savvy here because this is a guy that's still owed $36 million over the next 3 years on his contract, and he may not necessarily be the type of point guard that the Celtics can build around moving forward as the veterans start to move on. Here's the gist. Rondo, a tremendous distributor for the Garnett, Pierce, Allen trio, but his shot has never come around at any point over the course of his NBA career. The field goal percentage can be a little bit misleading because here's a guy who gets out on the break and gets a lot of layups and high percentage looks that way. But we're talking 23.5% on three-pointers. We're talking 61% from the charity stripe. So you can't even have the ball in Rondo's hands in close games during crunch time. You know, without the ability to make shots, his value is a little bit of an awkward issue. He's great in an environment where he can distribute to other shooters. He's not great when he's not in that environment. And for now, all this trade talk cannot help a Celtics team badly needing an emotional spark to generate that spark tonight.
Mavericks are hoping to have Dirk Nowitzki back on the court when they play at New Orleans tonight. He left after only 9:39 in their loss against Memphis on Wednesday. Key part of why there have been big defensive issues for them around the basket. You think about Dirk for offense, but with Dirk and Lamar Odom both missing, first two games since the break, they gave up 104 points in the paint. They lost to the Nets and Grizzlies both, despite those two teams shooting 9-for-35 from three-point range. Very, very awkward. They hope his back is going to be good enough to go. Where's Lamar Odom? So much being whispered about in Dallas. They were trying to say he wasn't with the team because his father was ill. Now there are some who are saying, you know what, he may never play another game in a Maverick uniform. They're actively trying to trade him. But it looks like as of a few minutes before we went on the air, we will see him on the basketball court again in the D-League. Apparently that's what they want to do to see if he can work his way back into shape. Not a punishment for him. Apparently he has accepted that assignment. He may want to be able to show in the D-League that he's worthy of playing for somebody else. If not the Mavericks, if they want to trade him, they need for him to show well. Opposite side of the equation, Carl Landry is getting closer and closer to coming back for New Orleans, but tonight, probably not the night just yet. A team that's actually played pretty well while they've been shorthanded. Maybe the chemistry gets disrupted when Emeka Okafor comes back, but not Landry. He's a good glue guy for that team.
Did Miami miss Chris Bosh last night? Not even a little bit. Bosh not on the floor. Didn't matter. Easy win at Portland. Wire-to-wire job for the Heat. And if anything, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade seem to relish the opportunity to take more shots on offense. And between them, 71 points on 25 of 45 shooting against a pretty good Blazers defense. They also had 16 assists between them, most of them one guy distributing the ball to the other. Supplying the glue again for Miami, the ultimate glue guy, Shane Battier. Here's another classic for your plus-minus library. Battier, 3 points and one rebound in 25 minutes of playing time as a starter. Yet with him on the floor, Miami, a plus 15 on the scoreboard during his time in the ballgame. The run for the Heat now 9-0 straight up, 8-1 against the spread during that span. Each and every one of their wins during this red-hot run has come by a dozen points or more, even in kind of an awkward second night of back-to-back spots in altitude on the road, coming off a TV game with a big showdown against the Lakers on Sunday. Miami, they're not a team that I personally am looking to stand in front of right now. No way, no how. Meanwhile, Tyrone Corbin faces some real issues patching his lineup together. Paul Millsap, he's a question mark at best tonight with a bruised left heel. Didn't play on Wednesday against Houston. Rajah Bell hasn't played since mid-February because of a strained abductor muscle in his groin. Devin Harris left Wednesday's game early due to nausea. Should be able to go tonight, but his backup, Jamal Tinsley, has not been able to participate since the All-Star break because of a bout of the flu.
One of the things we'll be doing a lot of work with today, and you should be doing as well, conference standings heading to those key final games. Teams that are going to maybe jockey for position that might play harder. Ivy League race could be real scintillating down the stretch. Harvard and Penn tied in the loss column going into the last cycle. Penn's got to play 3 games over the next 5 days. Harvard only has to play 2. If they finish tied, because they split head-to-head, there will be a playoff. Just like happened last year between Harvard and Princeton, Harvard lost that playoff game, did not get an at-large invite into the NCAA tournament. They were hoping the resume would be good enough this year, but maybe not just yet. As always, here's what you have to focus on, though. Must win means that. Must win, not must win by a margin. Especially for a game like Penn tonight. They're about there laying 14.5 against Brown. If you know you've got to win 3 games, over 5 days, in order to get that tie with Harvard, you don't go too far out of your way to get a margin in any of them. Who's the wild card in all this? Once again, it's Princeton. Now, Princeton has become, if they beat Yale tonight, Yale is eliminated from the race. Yale gets in if Harvard and Penn both lose, which is unlikely. And then Penn-Princeton on Tuesday could be the game where Princeton can knock Penn out of the Ivy running. This is something that's real significant. Yes, as much as the motivation is for a team to win and move on, if you could upset your rival's apple cart, that could be one of the biggest motivations of all. Okay, we didn't have a great season, but if we can knock you down, we've just found something special that we can do for ourselves. You always want to look in these rival settings for a team that can raise up and spoil it for their nemesis.
Well, speaking of spoilers, there's a prime setting tonight for a little spoiled Mac fruit when Akron takes that short bus ride to face arch rival Kent State. A win tonight, and the Akron Zips clinched the regular season MAC crown for the first time ever. But while that seems like to be the obvious motive, something that has held up well forever often gets misread in the marketplace. Many times a team that has a chance to spoil things for their arch rival actually brings a better focus to the game. They bring plenty of motivation, but a lot less pressure. Now, this is a quote from Kent State coach Rob Senderoff. Quote, I know this. Our seniors are not going to want to lose their last game here, certainly not to Akron. Akron did win the first regular season meeting between these two teams, 84-75 at home, but note that it included one of the more unusual box score lines of the season. Nick Harney scored 21 points in just 14 minutes of game time, 10 of 12 from the field. In all other games this season, Harney averaged just about 8 points per game.
We've talked a lot on this show about Senior Day, that final home game where you play with that little extra emotion. Well, sometimes you can learn a lot about a team for who's not there on Senior Day. It's been a very disappointing season for Jay Wright at Villanova. His worst since taking over as Wildcat head coach, 12-17 straight up, only 5-12 in Big East play. And a big part of it, who are they celebrating on Senior Day tomorrow? Nobody. No seniors on the roster. That's a big part of why that leadership wasn't there for the Wildcats. Something else isn't going to be there tomorrow, too, though. And it's something you need to focus in on this particular cycle. A lot of fans won't be there. Spring break starts at Villanova this week. Residence halls close after tonight. A lot of students have already left campus. If you've got a nondescript afternoon home game that means nothing for your team, are you sticking around to root for them, or are you off to Cancun or one of those areas? Keep in mind that Villanova students, they tend to be able to afford to take nice spring breaks. Not much of a senior day at Villanova.
Up next, we're not going to Cancun. We're going to stay right here and break down the ESPN matchups on tonight's NBA card.
Hey, I'm Alman.
Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it?
Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's weekend edition, money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the number. Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where tonight the 76ers, 7-point home favorites against the Golden State Warriors. And with Philadelphia right now, I mean, honestly, might be a case of simply letting the point spread be our guide with what to do with the Sixers. When the Sixers are favored by 7 points or more, like they are tonight, 13-1 straight up, 11-3 against the spread. In all other games, when they're not favored by 7 or more, 8-14 straight up, 8-13-1 against the point spread. So basically, Philadelphia has been a good bully and not particularly good in any other role. What happened in the first meeting between these two teams? Philly was a bully. 107-79 at Golden State. Complete domination. And you look at the box score from that game. And I remember watching it. And then in a recap, looking at the box score, what happened? It was real simple. One team played defense. One team didn't. The rest of the stats were basically comparable. But the Sixers shot about 10 percentage points better than Golden State in that ballgame. And it certainly showed up on the scoreboard. Although it's worth noting, number one, Golden State had the distraction of playing on New Year's Eve at home. And number two, the Warriors without Monta Ellis in that ballgame.
So now a lot of the stuff that Philadelphia did right was early in the season. A lot of these blowouts came early. The question is, as their confidence erodes a little bit, do we still trust them as much in this particular role? We've talked about Philadelphia struggling in close games this year. It happened again against Oklahoma City at home on Wednesday. They're now 2-10 this year in games decided by 7 points or less. So I thought, okay, let's break this down a little bit more. What is that culprit? Is it a design flaw where the X's and O's aren't right? Or is it a matter of confidence or not having the individual go-to players? Well, Doug Collins kind of answers this for us. Take a look at what he had to say after that Wednesday loss to Oklahoma City. As a coach, I hold myself incredibly accountable that I have to try to do a better job of maybe even getting us better shots. But we had 9 wide open shots in the fourth quarter. Is that Collins throwing his team under the bus? No, maybe that's Collins just acknowledging where his team is. Who is the go-to guy, again, in a close game? We know tonight who it could be for Golden State or who it may not be. But once again, if Philly doesn't get the blowout, do you want your money riding on them if the spread's close late?
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors face some of the same issues. They've got a go-to scorer in the fourth quarter in Monta Ellis, but the second guy, who they like to have both of them in the lineup, Stephon Curry, he has now been downgraded to out for this evening. Certainly doubtful. The betting markets don't think he's going to play. My sports option screen doesn't think he's going to play. We're going to assume moving forward that we're not going to see Curry on the floor this evening. We did, however, see a pretty strange replacement in the starting lineup for Curry. He was listed as a guard. I'm not sure why. He's 6'9", 240. Dominic McGuire got the start for Curry in Atlanta the other night. What happened? Nearly 36 minutes of playing time, 0 points, 1 shot attempt, 1 assist, but 15 rebounds. That's what McGuire brings to the table for Golden State. And this is a team that needs someone in that I'm going to grab boards and muscle around down low, because they haven't really had that guy for many years. And it led to a very different game flow against the Hawks. Boy, they mucked it up, and Golden State's not a team that we expect to see winning games when they score 85 points. That's exactly what they did. They held Atlanta to 33% shooting in that contest and had a season-high 53 rebounds.
Okay, maybe an ugly end game in Philadelphia, but in the ESPN nightcap in Phoenix could be a different story. Right now, the road team, the Clippers, laying 2.5 against the host Suns, this could be fun to watch late. Like most NBA games, forget about the first 3 quarters, but if it's close late, pop some popcorn. Chris Paul, Steve Nash, one-on-one in a close game. Could be awfully, awfully entertaining. The old man, Nash, having one of the most amazing under-the-radar seasons we've seen in professional sports in quite some time. Look at what he did to the kids last night. Minnesota, here comes Ricky Rubio, here comes Luke Ridenour. They're going to run around the old man, right? No, take a look at that Phoenix win. Nash, 17 assists in only 34 floor minutes. The entire Minnesota team only had 14, and that's 240 floor minutes. Ricky Rubio, he had 2 assists. How good has Nash been? If we do assists per 48 minutes, prorated all the way out, 4 full assists more than anyone else in the NBA, and he's getting assists for Phoenix. Look at the rest of that lineup. And how easy are you going to get an assist to Gortat and some of these other guys? He's having a remarkable year. Should be interesting watching him go head-to-head with Paul, because his Clipper defense that we've talked about many times on the show, they keep sinking lower and lower. They're now number 23 in the NBA on our best defensive ratings. Nash will make some things happen against that defense, but there's a problem for the Suns elsewhere in this matchup.
Oh, no question. What's Phoenix's biggest issue been so far this year? Rebound. I mean, this is a game where the point guard battle is going to be great to watch, but the game may well be decided by the board. So far this season, the Clippers, the number 4 team in the NBA in rebounding margin, The Phoenix Suns, number 25 in the NBA in rebounding margin. So assuming turnovers are even, assuming field goal shooting percentages are even, the battle of the boards could go a long way towards determining tonight's winner in this ballgame. Now, Phoenix hired Elston Turner, the number one assistant, to help shore up that particular area. And Turner, as Gentry's top assistant right now, he's showing frustration that it's not working. Here's a quote from Elston Turner, quote, "Rebounding is a combination of heart and hustle. Just ask Dennis Rodman. There is no big-time skill in that. Sometimes it's a mental block where you're just not making contact, or you step in and the ball bounces right where you came from." Now, Phoenix, they have no answer for Blake Griffin, none whatsoever. They're going to have to try to deny him the ball with the quickness of Channing Frye or Hakeem Warrick. But really, once Griffin gets the ball in the low post, not a lot of defensive answers for that Sun if they cannot deny him. Maybe, just maybe, we'll end up seeing more Robin Lopez than usual this evening in an effort to defend Griffin. And that may set up a transition to another Lopez we're interested in talking about, Dave, right?
Go back to yesterday's show. We did a postmortem on Brook Lopez, you know, how dynamic he was. Not only him, but the entire New Jersey team now that he's back on the court. Notice that it wasn't just when he started playing, it's when he started practicing. The last three times the Nets have been road underdogs, they won all three of the games outright, showing that competitive drive again. So tonight, let's look to New Jersey as our Vegas sports they play of the day. Take that 6.5 against Boston. Teddy talked about some of the Celtic issues in our Insider Six-Pack. Keep in mind, here's a team that's only 17-17, despite facing the number 28 schedule in the NBA. In other words, if you put Boston out against just an average league schedule, it'd be a clear losing team. 6.5, a lot of value going into a Boston team having a difficult time getting margins. And, you know, maybe no surprise if the outright upset occurs.
New Jersey Nets, the play of the day in the NBA for tonight. But that's not all you're going to get for watching the weekend preview edition. We've got a college breakdown as Money Time continues and a second play of the day before this show is through. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Saturday night in Durham, North Carolina. We've got a rematch that everyone seems to be excited about for some reason. Duke versus North Carolina. The projected look-ahead line for this game, right around Pick'em. Straight-up winner expected to cover the point spread here. Now, first thing we got to do, take a look back at what happened the first time these two teams met. An 85-84 Blue Devils victory in Chapel Hill against the Tar Heels. But you guys remember that game, right? North Carolina led 82-72 with just over 2 minutes remaining. 10-point lead at home, 2 minutes to go. They're supposed to win, right? Heck, they're supposed to even cover at that point. Didn't happen. Duke scored on their final six possessions of the ballgame. That included a made three-pointer after an air ball and the shot clock reset. It was ruled to have been blocked. Mistake by the refs. Seth Curry traveled. What did he take, about four steps? And then he hit a three-pointer. Another mistake by the refs. They got a two-pointer when Tyler Zeller tipped a ball into his own basket for North Carolina. And then, of course, the game-winning three as the shot clock wound down. So that going to happen again, Dave? Do we expect more of the same?
Not only a fascinating end game, but what an intriguing box score to break down. Let's go back and take a look at some of the key categories in that first meeting. And you find that North Carolina was winning so many of these across the board. Field goal percentage, 49-2 to 43-5. You win the game with that. Better at the free throw line, 70% to 65.4. Dominated the boards, a plus 10, 41 to 31, and fewer turnovers. So wait a minute. You outshot them by almost 6%. You beat them by 10 rebounds. You had one fewer turnover. How do you lose the game? Look at the scoring from three-point range. Duke, 42-3, a plus 39-point advantage. Duke gets almost half of their points in the entire game from three-point range. That is a big factor as we go down. Obviously, it means they took a lot more shots from three. 36 of their 62 shots were beyond the arc. Carolina, they only took six shots beyond the arc the entire night. So that's going to be the key. Duke is probably going to take those shots again because that's what the one weakness Carolina has is the manpower there to be able to get out and defend that three-point line in the rematch.
Yeah, that's a key question for the rematch, Dave. How does Roy Williams turn that perimeter defense around? It's not going to be easy. Without Dexter Strickland, there's just not a lot of depth at the guard spots for North Carolina. That makes it difficult to extend and to chase, particularly in a high-tempo game like this one is supposed to be. You wonder, is the lack of depth for the Tar Heels the reason they lost that first matchup? Did the late-game fatigue become an issue on the perimeter? Does having to extend more on defense make Kendall Marshall less effective at running the offense? Those are questions likely to be answered in Durham on Saturday night.
The second big showdown of the weekend, big intensity level, much different game flow than Duke Carolina. Let's go to Saturday or Sunday afternoon in East Lansing, Michigan. The host team, Michigan State, projected about a 2.5-point favorite over Ohio State. Major rematch here with huge Big Ten championship implications. Michigan State wins, they're in. If Ohio State wins, and if Michigan beats Penn State that same day, you end up with a three-way tie. A lot on the line here, but maybe more than anything else, a pride element. First time around, 58-48. Michigan State in Columbus, a bit of a physical beatdown that they dealt to the Buckeyes, which is why we wonder about the Buckeyes bringing their A game for this revenge match. Michigan State's defense was so good in that setting, we've got to break it down for you.
Yeah, we do. That may have been the best defensive game played by two teams, both teams, all season long. Given the quality of competition and the venue, I don't know that anyone all year played better defense than the Spartans did in that first meeting. Defense and rebounding, a Tom Izzo staple. Now look at the numbers. MSU's, Michigan State's defense in Columbus. Well, they allowed 14 of 53 from the floor. That's 26% shooting for Ohio State. They allowed 2 of 15 from beyond the arc from a great three-point shooting team, just 13% from the Buckeyes in that contest. Ohio State, 6 assists, 15 turnovers. That's not a pretty ratio whatsoever. You know, and a quick glance is going to show, yeah, Jared Sullinger had 17 points and 16 rebounds. He dominated inside. No, he didn't. Jared Sullinger, 5 of 15 from the floor, didn't get good looks, and 10 turnovers. The Spartans had a defensive answer for what he was trying to do. Ohio State's a very quick team. They're a very athletic team. But when forced into a down-and-dirty game like this matchup was, they didn't play well off the physical contact that Sparty Spartan was delivering. Of course, it wasn't like the Spartans had a great offensive game. They scored only 58 points, shot 40% from the floor, had twice as many turnovers as assists in that game. Draymond Green, 12 points, 9 boards. But like Sullinger, he shot poorly, 5 of 16 from the floor, and had 3 turnovers in that effort.
So before either of those showdowns tip off, got something good for the pockets. Let's go back to Philadelphia, where we visited the Villanova situation and our Insider six-pack. Something that makes it even tougher for Jay Wright. Yeah, crowd's going to be down. No last home game emotion for the seniors. But you know what? They played at Rutgers Thursday night. Quick turnaround, not a lot of preparation time for an afternoon tip-off. And what happens right after this game? You got to get to Madison Square Garden because you had such a bad season, you're playing Tuesday in the early, early rounds of the Big East tournament. Let's take the road team Cincinnati, and we don't mind laying a point to Villanova here. Cincinnati, one more quality win away from securing an at-large spot in the NCAA tournament. Cincinnati more physical than Villanova, deeper, hungrier, certainly the type of team we like to look to grind out a win in this environment.
Yeah, Cincinnati minus one on the look ahead line. We got a parameter there?
A basket or less.
Yeah, if you basket get a two, less. Two and a half. But may well see a one in that ballgame. That is, again, the look ahead line for the Saturday's Big East Showdown. You got an NBA Play of the Day winner for tonight. You got a College Hoops Play of the Day winner for tomorrow. You got analysis. You've got breakdowns. You've got conference tournament thoughts. We're done, Dave. It's been a good week. Let's do it again next week. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again on Monday.